You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Robbins. Here we are with a brand new story. This is the first chapter of The Frostfair Affair, a Regency magic comedy of manners with spires and sleigh rides. This is the sequel to Tea and Sympathetic Magic, but you don't need to have read Miss Mnemosyne Seaborn's first adventure to enjoy this one. If you do want to catch up on Tea and Sympathetic Magic, you can listen to it here on the podcast from a little earlier in the year. And this month, all my Patreon subscribers can download the ebook straight away. That's for as little as a $1 pledge. Tea and Sympathetic Magic will be released generally to non-Patreon subscribers a little later this year, as will The Frostfair Affair. The Frostfair Affair by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Dedication for Nancy Blackett, whom I am quite sure became a spy, and Susan Walker, who kept everyone fed. Dramatis personae. Miss Mnemosyne Neame Seaborn, a notorious young lady. Juno Jupiter, the Duchess of Storm, recently married and equally notorious. Henry Jupiter, the Duke of Storm, a happily married member of the Court of Lords with a splendid townhouse. Mr. Charles Thornbury, a spellcracker of note. Mr. Galbraith Savinny, an anti-royalist parliamentarian. Mrs. Cato Savinny, a fashionable wife of an anti-royalist parliamentarian. Mrs. Fenchurch, a printer's wife with many small children. Mr. Fenchurch, a printer. Lady Liesel of Sandwich, an eligible young lady. The Countess of Balmady, an influential lady of a certain age. Mrs. Threnod, the companion of an influential lady of a certain age. Luce, a cider wife. Elsie, a cider wife's wife. Bellings, a butler. Nanny Savignon, a barely there chaperone. Thomas, a coachman turned sleigh driver. Hermes Fierro, a celebrity. Figgy, a seat filler. Lars Zephyr, an inventive tutor. Queen Aud of the Teacup Isles, a monarch. Mr. Octavian Swift, a consultant. Mrs. Marchering, a housekeeper. An unnamed glassblower. Mr. Seaborn, an enthusiastic scholar, less enthusiastic husband, and supportive papa, barely appears in this story. Mrs. Galatea Seaborn, a matchmaking mama, mistress of Shellitch standing, far too busy to appear in this story. Miss Metis Seaborn, a pragmatic cousin who cleverly avoids appearing in this story. And also Basil, a glass hedgehog. Chapter 1. Noble Women and Notoriety. It was a very peculiar thing to be notorious. Miss Mnemosyne Seaborn had always been one for avoiding public attention. As the wealthy, unfettered daughter of a legendary family, the last thing she wanted was to capture attention as one of those Seaborns. Since she first came of age, her goal in life was to avoid the state of marriage until she could find that rarest of creatures, a husband she could tolerate. The best way to do this was to ensure one was forgotten about as often as possible. Neame's method was to cultivate a reputation of dullness and mediocrity. When she absolutely had to attend a ball or public assembly, she dedicated herself to being the least appealing wallflower of the company. Her wit and sparkle were kept for private circles and trusted friends. It worked for a long time. Her greatest success was the endless frustration of her mama, who could not understand how a respectable daughter with a reasonable dowry was such a failure at catching husbands. But all that was before the matter of the elopement and the rescue of the Duke of Storm, before Nîmes' world was turned upside down by a family scandal, before last season. Before a certain spellcracker with rolled-up shirt sleeves caught her attention and made her think that perhaps she had found a man worthy of marriage. Notoriety was the first consequence Nîmes suffered from last season's scandal, thanks largely to the discreet arrest and rather less discreet criminal trial of a certain female relative of the Seaborne family. The Tower of Time was where the Queen always banished high-ranking magical criminals. It was not a discreet punishment. Society quickly flooded with rumours about how such a matter could possibly have come about. Nîmes faced whispers and pointing fingers everywhere she went. Some admired her for her role in the Duke's rescue, especially those who were friends with the other ladies involved. Others spread far nastier rumours or gossiped meanly about her marriage prospects. One thing was for sure, everyone knew who she was. All that work of becoming a non-entity was now wasted. Nîmes received 3 offers of marriage in the first week after the trial, 2 patronising, 1 downright insulting. And it was quite a task to refuse all 3 suitors gracefully, while hiding their proposals from her family. Cousin Metis made the rather sensible decision to set sail for the continent on a grand tour immediately. Nîmes sometimes thought wistfully that she should have taken up her cousin's offer to join her for a 12-month at least, until the worst of it died down. But she could not. She had work to do, a mission, for the first time in her life. Instead of running away from it all, Nîmes chose to winter in town, her least favourite of all the Teacup Isles. She would hurl herself directly into the lion's den of invitations, social engagements, and urban entertainments, a world where gossip was a currency higher placed than silver or silk. Far from her beloved home and garden and solitude. It would all be worth it. It had to be worth it. If she was to be notorious, then she would use that notoriety for something constructive. She had work to do, and town was the only place where she could realise her vision. Accommodation, at least, was not an issue. Nîmes knew a bosom friend and cousin by marriage, the Duchess of Storm, insisted that Nîmes join her at the ducal residence. Stormbolt, one of many properties owned by Nîmes' cousin Henry, was a grand city manor, featuring 4 secret passages, 12 maids, and 3 libraries. Nîmes was grateful for the offer, and for Juno's friendship. Living in town was a strain on her usual sensibilities, but the sheer magnitude and breadth of those 3 ducal libraries helped a lot. Also, from here, she would be able to continue her pleasurable acquaintance with Mr. Charles Thornbury, the Duke's personal spellcracker, who was obliged to be in town supporting his employer while the Court of Lords was in session. Mr. Thornbury and Nîmes were not technically engaged to be married, though their understanding was such that an engagement might be forthcoming in the future, once all the fuss had settled down and Nîmes could bear to let him anywhere near her parents. Had she remained at home on the Isle of Memory all winter, at her modest family estate, Nîmes might have hoped for a few visits from her suitor. After all, Mr. Thornbury had the convenience of portal travel at his fingertips, as did all gentlemen of means. Ladies were forbidden to travel by portal, which meant that Nîmes would have been reduced to pining and sighing awaiting Mr. Thornberry's visits without ever being able to initiate her own. Also, visits would have been supervised by her mama. A trying experience for all concerned. For convenience of courtship as well as her campaign, Stormbolt was the best possible choice. Though, of course, the campaign was the priority. Completely. Entirely. Neem was aflame with passion for her new cause, and for that she would put up with any number of stares and whispers and social gatherings. It was such a terrible injustice that the gentlemen of the Teacup Isles were able to pop about via portal whenever they chose, while social convention forbade women from doing the same. The tyranny of distance enforced upon her sex had long been taken for granted, as the way of things, a bitter inconvenience that must be endured, like childbirth or corsetry. But they lived in an age where corsetry had fallen out of fashion, and amulets could be purchased to regulate or even prevent the conception of children. Why should women still be forced to travel from island to island in such dreadfully old-fashioned and tiresome vehicles as swan-shaped boats or lace-draped carriages? During the incident last season, about which the least said the better, Neem had found herself faced with a choice: to step through a portal and rescue her cousin Henry from an unfortunate marriage, or hang back and let Mr. Thornberry attempt a rescue unaided. She chose adventure and never felt the slightest regret about it. She was joined by a bevy of equally brave unmarried ladies who risked their reputations to save the day and the Duke. While they all faced heightened notoriety thanks to their association with the Duke's abduction, not a whisper had spread about their unladylike mode of transportation in the middle of it all. That, at least, they had been spared. And yet, Neem could not help but be annoyed about the whole affair. The heavens had not fallen in upon them. No thunderbolt incinerated them for their boldness. The only consequence suffered by Neem and her friends after breaking one of society's greatest restrictions upon women was that they arrived where they needed to be, quickly and at great convenience. It had to stop. Neem was going to change the world for ladies like herself. Notorious or not. "Must we walk every day?" Neem asked Juno, as the two of them perambulated around the shady avenue, between the Museum of Antiquities and the Library of Arcane Promises. She did not mind the exertion, but she did rather mind the faces darting out at her from behind fur hoods and parasols, checking to see if it really was one of those scandalous Seaborn girls, arm in arm with the new and equally controversial Duchess of Storm. Mouths formed whispers, not quite loud enough to be heard across the chilly street, but clear in their meaning. "Is that? It must be. Daughter of, niece of, cousin of, and that with her, the new married to. You heard about that wedding, I suppose. Oh, you haven't heard? Let me tell you. La! Teacups and hedgehogs." Honestly, the way they all carried on, you'd think she was the Silver Spoon Strangler, not a perfectly ordinary young lady who happened to have an embarrassing aunt. "It is important to be seen," said Juno proudly, her head thrown back. Garbed in the most extraordinary hooded confection of a walking coat, recently shipped in from the continent, she was in her element. Notoriety suited her, especially now it came matched with a title. Duchess went with everything. At the end of the shady avenue, as they approached the arcade of ladylike dainties, the two of them turned, with a graceful and practiced spin, heading back the way they came. Juno always insisted on several laps of the avenue, before she allowed them inside the arcade for tea, chocolate, and browsing. Neem appreciated the nudge, really, though she did feel that the daily promenade in icy winds was excessive. "I'm certain we could be seen somewhere warm and indoors." "Don't fuss so," said Juno. "How do you expect to achieve greatness if no one knows who you are?"
"They all know who I am," Neem reminded her.
"They think they know, but seeing is different to gossiping. Seeing you in a fine coat, walking about like you have nothing to hide, will do far more for your campaign than printing leaflets and muttering in corners with blue stockings."
"I need to do more than show off this year's winter fashion," Neem protested. Still, she could not hold back the inner glow that took hold with Juno's words. "Achieve greatness."
Yes, indeed, that was exactly what she wished to do. "I want them to listen to what I have to say."
"The Court of Lords is in session for 36 more days," said Juno, who had clearly been thinking about it. "And that overlaps with the Parliament of Gentles, which opens shortly. If the dreaded portal issue was actually against the law, it would be straightforward enough. You need only arrange for one lord to draft a bill to allow portal travel for ladies, and 8 more to support it, and then arrange for a majority of Parliament to pass it into law."
"Oh, is that all?" said Neem, indulging in a little sarcasm. "Portal travel is not against the law."
"Exactly," said Juno. "That's what makes it all so devilish tricky. If we show our hand before we achieve the tipping point of popularity, some chump will see a chance to pop in and make the ban official."
"I don't see why we need to involve gentlemen at all," said Neem. "Surely if we attach some significant patronesses to the campaign and raise awareness with more meetings, perhaps some fundraising."
"This isn't a charity, nor an opera fund," said Juno.
"You want to change the minds of the great and good as to what is respectable. If ladies are the only ones discussing it, it will never be seen as a significant issue. No, we must convince some gentlemen to rally to our side and raise the topic where the public gallery will hear it."
"Not my husband, of course," she added firmly.
"But Henry agrees."
"What use is him agreeing with us? He might be high up in the lordly food chain on a technicality, but no one takes him seriously at all. What you need is someone respected and conservative to believe this is all his own idea and pipe up about it in public. Then you need some unpopular rabble-rouser of a parliamentarian, like that Savini fellow, who holds such sway with the anti-royalist party, to shout it down, also in public. If we get the timing right, the crusty old lords will all decide that portal travel is the sort of thing their grandmothers would have approved of, and that's how you change the world." She snapped her fingers elegantly. Neem felt quite dizzy. It was a wonder that Juno was not out of breath.
"I was rather hoping we could convince the Queen to take our side," she admitted. "If we could get near her to ask..."
Juno scoffed. "You expect a female monarch to take an interest in the rights of women? She has all the rights she could ever need, and hardly travels beyond town and court. Her currency is popularity, not justice. Not to mention half of the Court of Lords, the half who snooze through lunch, mostly, are still so traumatised at having a young female ruler in the first place. They'll complain from here to eternity if they think she approves of a thing. She's been trying to fund schools for orphans for the last 3 years, and they obstruct her at every turn."
"That's almost discouraging," said Neem, in dismay.
"Ah, well, that's without factoring in our secret weapon."
That was alarming, not least because her friend's tone of voice suggested she was planning something exceedingly scandalous, or at least rather naughty.
"Juno, what on earth do you have in mind?"
The new Duchess of Storm laughed long and loud, in a way that lesser-ranked ladies would never be allowed. She had embraced her new status with a confident ease of which few ladies under 30 were capable.
Oh, your face! My dear Neame, what on earth must you be imagining?
It was not so long ago that Neame knew, not suspected, but knew, that Juno was the kind of person who was ruthless and ambitious enough to use magical means to catch a duke for a husband. It might not be nice to question the ethics of the lady who had been such a good friend to her, but it was also not unreasonable. Neame was notorious now. Why limit herself to what was considered nice? Forgive me if I blanch at the use of the word weapon after what transpired with my family, she said, rather sharply.
It was a metaphor, you goose!
Juno pulled her fur hood around her face as a particularly chill breeze swept up the avenue to pinken their cheeks.
I was speaking of the Senate.
They should take our side with a little persuasion, and I believe they will be the allies we need for a successful campaign.
Neame blinked several times, the chill wind making her eyes prickle.
Her family were hardly political, but she knew the basics of how governance worked in the Teacup Isles. The Queen ruled overall, but laws, governance, and financial decisions ran through the paired bodies of the Court of Lords and the Parliament of Gentles. That was the way of things.
What Senate? She asked, feeling foolish.
Juno squeezed her arm in a convivial manner.
The secret one, of course. The only way that women get anything done around here. Are you famished? I'm famished. Let's go in for tea.
Thank you all for listening to Sheep Might Fly and my brand new serial, The Frost Fair Affair. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. This month, the special offers are all about tea and sympathetic magic, both the ebook and the paperback that is coming soon. Some of my Patreon subscribers will get that before anybody else. And next month, which is September, so probably only about 5 or 6 years away now, September, all the special offers will be about the Frost Fair Affair. And again, Patreon subscribers will get access to the ebook and paperback before anybody else does. So thank you all. I'll invite you to come and join me again next week for Snow and the Secret Senate, which, as you might be able to tell, I'm kind of delighted with the chapter titles of the Frost Fair Affair. So I'll be mentioning them as often as possible. So yes, Snow and the Secret Senate next week on Sheep Might Fly.